Welcome to The Product Management. We bring to you industry experts to share their valuable insights via this podcast on various topics related to product management. These include marketing, sales, development, growth, product fit, and many more. For latest updates, please subscribe to theproductmanagement.com.
Hi, I'm your host Ujjwal. This is The Product Management, and today we have Jasnoor, Director of Product Management at Nutanix. So Jasnoor brings in about 10 years of product management experience. Earlier, he's been in various roles. He's worked in a startup as a product marketing manager. In past life, he's been a techie. He's worked as product manager with Zynga, has been director of products at Calm.io, which got acquired by Nutanix. And now he works as director of product management at Nutanix. Welcome, Jasnoor.
Thanks, Richard.
All right, so today we are here and we love to talk about the hiring process of product management, and we'd love to know, how does it start? Like, you have an organization set up, you start a startup. When is it that one should, you know, start looking for a PM or start making a PM team? So what I mean is, what state of the company, what state of the product, you know, is it based on team size, and you know, how many PMs one should hire at any point? So maybe, you know, a little longish question, but yeah, you can take time to answer it.
Sure. So, I mean, I've worked at, I think now, at least two startups over time, and obviously talked to multiple startups as they build teams and hire and so on. And I think almost every company you go to, whenever they start, it's always the founders who are going to be deciding what product they're building, right? Or one of the founders, to be specific, is essentially going to be your first PM or CPO, whatever you want to call it, right? So people have an idea, they decide they're going to build something, and they go build, essentially, either they get feedback or they go build an MVP, right? And at that point, it is either both founders or one of the founders who takes the lead and is de facto PM. And the other thing that happens in most startups is that the founders are going to be the first sales guys. They are going to be the people who go pitch the product to the first 5-10 customers, get people on board. Well, assuming B2B, if it's B2C, I don't know, first 1,000 customers, first 10,000 customers that they sell to. And so till that time, it's always going to be X, the core team that's doing PM. What happens is, once you start building the product, once you start getting your first couple of customers, you start getting feedback. And you start getting people asking for feature X, feature Y, feature Z. If you only have one customer, you're fine. You have built, and that happens often, right? You build for one large customer, you build a product, or you build for yourself as a customer in a past life.
Absolutely.
And then you go start selling that product. The challenge, of course, is once you start having multiple customers, someone needs to go figure out, what do you build, how do you build, what level of feedback do you get, how do you scale that product or go into adjacent markets or whatever. And that's typically the point at which companies go, like, we need someone to manage this full time. Because Now as a CEO or as a CTO, whoever's wearing the product hat, you have 20 other things you're doing. You're running engineering, you're running business, you're trying to figure out marketing, sales, fundraising. And so at that point, you need someone whose full-time job, for lack of a better explanation, is the product, right? The experience that your users get. The second proxy there, of course, is funding.
Correct.
You either have to hire someone really junior, where you say, I'm paying him out of a seed round, or I'm giving him co-founder level equity, or I don't know, 2%, 5%, whatever. Or you say, I'm close to raising a Series A round. I have about, I don't know, 10, 20 employees, and now I need a PM. Coincidentally, I've seen 2-3 companies where the PM was between employee 20 to 30, for example. So they had an initial product in place, and now that they're trying to either release it or start scaling it, building, iterating over it, that they decide they need a PM in place, right? In terms of team size, I think everyone can start with one PM. That's not really a constraint in any form or function. What does happen is that, especially, okay, assuming we're talking startups, your startup PM is anyways going to wear multiple hats. He's not only going to do product, he'll probably also go talk to customers, pitch your product, he'll go start, maybe have to build collateral, data sheets, white papers, how do you pitch marketing messages, might have to do ads, again, growth PM stuff, right? That guy gonna anyways been doing everything because, well, you probably don't have the budget to hire dedicated people for all these functions. The only exception to this is if you are late, because you're, let's say your founder or your CTO wears the CPO hat for a long time, and at some point you decide to directly hire a director or a VP of product. In which case, probably part of the deal with that guy is going to be that he'll want to build a team, right? But then again, I'm hoping at that point you can afford to build that team of PMs, and in which case that guy can go and come in and build a full PM function for you. And of course, it's important to set those expectations around what that guy will come in and do and how much budget he has and things like that.
Right. And yeah, I mean, there are memes floating around which say, you know, the VP of products, you might be a VP of products at a startup and nobody is reporting to you. So,
sure.
So you may not have a team, of course, but you can still be a, you know, head PM, or you can still be heading one, you know, function.
See, the problem with startups is titles are free.
Right.
So everyone's a VP.
Right.
And that works out well, not so well often, because at that point you're hoping that you can scale to be a VP.
Right.
Because if you can't in a year, they will either have to demote you and bring in someone above you. So if you're VP, they'll probably get an SVP of product or a CPO of product. And the challenge with that is, again, that setting expectations. If I'm hiring a PM, and if you've been a PM for only 3 years, understandably you have very deep domain expertise, or you're a founder, you're not going to be head of product.
Right.
And I think giving that guy the title of head of product is doing him a disservice to some extent, because usually founders know they will bring in someone else above this guy later. And if they don't make that clear upfront, it sets you up for conflict later, where this guy will either quit.
Right.
Or he's going to be genuinely unhappy.
Which is a loss overall. Usually, yeah.
So don't promise head of product if the guy's not going to be head of product. Call him senior PM, call him director PM, whatever. I think that makes for a more gradual, that understanding is there between the founders and that PM. I mean, the guy could turn out to be a genius.
Right.
In which case, yes, you will say, I will promote you and I'll make you VP of product later.
Right.
But if he's not a VP of product guy today, don't give him VP of product title.
Right. Makes sense.
Just going to lead to angst. Of course, maybe you leave after 2 years, take that title and go do VP of product somewhere else.
Yeah.
That works out too.
That's so true. Right. All right. So you just briefly mentioned growth PM. That brings me to the second question, that are there different types of product managers? Officially, there are designations like technical product manager, we have product manager, then we have growth PMs, we have product marketing manager. So are they really different, or is just organizations trying to define it in different ways because the way they are organized, or before the way they function?
So this goes back to the first question in terms of product managers at startups, for example, having to wear many hats, right?
Yes.
So you will often have a PM who is doing multiple things, maybe focusing more on one versus the other. And sometimes as you grow, you might go bring in more PMs and specialize, where you say this guy focuses on customers, this guy focuses on outbound, the other guy focuses on working with engineering, writing requirements, and, you know, much more involved on day-to-day engineering PM and feature prioritization and so on. And people automatically specialize to some extent. So similarly, you have PMMs on the B2B side, which is product marketing, which I think to some extent translates to growth PMs on B2C.
Right.
These are people who are external facing or responsible for how you grow your product and so on.
Right.
And they're pretty much all outbound, focused on social media, web, how you do outreach to your customers and so on. Will it typically be the same guy? Again, depending on hats, probably someone who specializes in that role. Can someone move across roles? Yes. You often have PMs who move to PMM, who move to growth and essentially become domain experts over time, right? Could you be one type of PM in one company and go interview as growth PM at another company or on the same company? Sure. Now you could go interview, but would I hire you versus someone who's worked as a growth PM for 3 years somewhere? I mean, that guy has an edge. He understands the domain pretty well.
Right.
Capability-wise, we were talking about this before starting the podcast.
Right.
Capability-wise is a slightly different question, since can someone who's a good PM do growth PM or do PMM? Sure, I'm sure they can.
Right.
But there's still a learning curve involved, and you will need someone to give you a shot, essentially, to go on that side. The only caveat I would say is going the other way around, from growth PM to technical PM, you should have a technical background. I mean, it's hard otherwise. Depending on the product.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's Swiggy, you're probably fine.
Right.
But if it's something that's deep into supply chain, or if it's a B2B product, deep into something technical, you will have to have a technical understanding of the product to move from PMM to technical PM, for example.
Understood. And can you also briefly highlight what kind of, what is the expectation from a technical PM versus a PMM or a product marketing manager?
Sure. So PMMs are much more outbound, right? They're focused on market messaging, customers, and so on. And being able to build good collateral, pitch decks, work with sales to sell your product and so on. Of course, understand the product, understand product roadmap and what you're building, why you're building and so on. But the PM is probably going to be way more hands-on in terms of working with designers, working with engineering and defining every single knob and feature in the product. Right? PMMs, you typically will not expect them to do this. There might be PMs, again, who straddle both
right. And
do both roles and parts and so on. But if you're a dedicated PMM, typically you will have a PM backing you up. Right? And this is what all the major companies do.
Right.
This is what, Microsoft has different titles, for example. Their program managers are more product managers
right.
and so on.
Right.
But they have those roles get split as you become more and more specialized as a company.
Right. All right. So now that we have set the context, sort of, let's get on to the theme of today, which is like how to hire, a good PM or how to make a good PM team. That's, I think, what is the major problem in the industry right now. Everyone who's looking to make a PM team is struggling to find great PMs or PMs that they expect would solve the problems for them. So let's jump right into that discussion and understand, what are the channels to find a good PM? How should the JD be done? What should be the job description? How do you evaluate a PM? What should be must-haves or red flags?
Sure. And this is something even I'm still learning, right? We're always building teams. There's always either growth or people as they move on over time and so on.
Right.
I think to start with, if you're a smaller company, if you're a startup, it's always network, right? You will know people who know people, and you ask around, and you may not even have a JD in some cases at that point because you're still trying to discover what you need, and you go talk to people and figure out if someone feels like a fit. And at most small companies, whether we like it or not, culture fit will become important as well.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you are like, you have to work together in, let's say, a stressful environment with customer acquisition pressure, funding issues, and all those things. So end of the day, a lot of times you will not even have a JD and not have anything going on. But I mean, majority of cases, as you move on, you grow as a company, yes, you will have a proper JD, a proper sourcing method, HR, and so on. I still think your majority of PMs are going to come through your networks. It may not be your personal network or the founder's network at that point, but it'll be your employees who know people they have worked in past lives, in other companies, LinkedIn connections, and so on. I think that's the most strong attach in some sense,
mm-hmm,
right? The
mm-hmm.
way of attracting good candidates who will actually maybe even accept your offer, stay and work with you for longer.
Mm-hmm.
Alumni networks are always a good source.
Mm-hmm.
Colleges, engineering, an MBA, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Right? All alumni networks are a good source of reaching out because you are to some extent vouching for the job,
right?
And you're not gonna ditch the guy after 6 months. Well, you could, but that's not gonna be well for your personal network and so on.
Right.
So that's always the first way of sourcing,
right?
And then there's of course HR and recruiting agencies and so on. But the hit rate on those, or even just the probability of finding good candidates out of those, is usually lower.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, every single job I've gotten in my life, and well, I'm at, I don't know, 5-6 plus at
mm-hmm.
least, but probably not over 10. Every single one has been through a warm intro through someone.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
That's just how you get your opportunities typically.
Right. Particularly in the senior roles.
Yeah, senior roles, I would imagine, almost always are
almost
not going to be headhunting opportunities.
Yes.
It's always someone you know who's looking for something, who vouches for a role or something in that sense, right? From a JD perspective, I think, and again, this is something we were talking about, is that people just have boilerplates, right? They go online, they search for good PM JD, and then they copy paste and send it out. And I think it's important for JDs to be honest.
Yes.
Right? What is it that you are hiring for? What is this exact role? What are your mandatory requirements? Is it number of years of experience? If you're hiring a senior PM, you probably want him to have spent 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years doing PM, for example. Is it upfront in that JD so that people are not wasting their time? And you're not wasting your own time screening those candidates as well. Right? What are mandatory, but maybe not mandatory, what are good to have requirements? What is good to have prior experience? Or are you very specific that maybe this is a payments PM, he needs to have payments experience? Is that upfront in that JD?
Right.
Again, you will still get candidates who will randomly apply to everything.
Yeah.
But in most cases, if it's a good candidate, he's actually reading the JD and hopefully he's getting something out of it in terms of what kind of opportunity this is. What's the exciting thing about working for your company versus, I don't know, working for 10 other companies who have copy-pasted that same boilerplate JD,
right?
And it doesn't have to be the same for your whole team. If you're hiring 10 PMs, not all 10 are doing the exact same thing. Right, someone may be working on analytics, someone may be more focused on design, and you need to make sure that comes out in the JD when you're hiring for that particular role.
Yeah, one thing that I keep seeing is like in every JD, there's like need a rock star, so that has become a, like a very cliched and overused term.
My JDs do not have be a rock star.
Thankfully.
See?
So basically, you're not looking for rock stars then.
Well, there's that challenge, right? Everyone wants a rock star, but how many rock stars exist?
Right.
What you want is a good PM.
Right.
End of the day. You want someone who understands product.
Right.
Right. You may or may not want domain expertise. As an example, the space I work in.
Right.
It is very hard to find that domain expertise in PM in Bangalore in this specific space.
Absolutely.
Right. So I don't expect it.
Right.
If I did it, I would narrow down to maybe 2 companies in Bangalore I can hire from. And honestly, I don't like their product. That's why I'm building a competing product. Why would I hire someone who's working there?
Right.
Or who built that product that I don't like.
Right.
Right. So in my case, for example, I don't have a fixture on domain specific. I've hired PMs who were BD guys.
Right.
But they were technical enough to understand APIs and stuff that I care about to some extent.
Right.
To me, that matters. Evaluation-wise, there's 500 ways to evaluate a PM.
Absolutely.
Right. And I think primarily what comes out to me is how they think about product. Right. Do they like products? Are they passionate about the product? And this doesn't have to be their product, right? Because you may, for example, if it's a junior PM, he may not have been a PM earlier, as an example. But the point is that if you're going to be a PM, if you are going to work on a product, you own that product,
right?
You work on it day in and day out. Well, hopefully you still go to sleep and you still have a life. But when you're in office, that's essentially what you're going to spend, hopefully more than a year of your life working on. And to me personally, what I'm looking for is, are they passionate about anything in their life? Because I would hopefully want them to be passionate about my product or the product they work on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And can they be passionate about something?
That's a great point. So you're saying if a person is passionate about something in life, it is more likely that they can bring in some passion about the product itself.
To some extent, yes.
Okay.
It could even be a hobby, right? But for example, in my interview process, I'm looking for, are you passionate about any product? It doesn't even have to be software, right? Give me a physical product you love, you hate, right? And if you like something, and here's the thing, and this is the standard question, right? What product do you like? Tell me 2 things that are good about it, bad about it. That's fine.
Right.
But here's the thing, you like a product. Sure, and you can talk about why you like it. Uber's done an awesome job, Spotify is epic, whatever. But my point is, what irritates the fuck out of you when you use that product?
The same thing.
That same product.
Yep.
If you're a PM,
right,
and you love a product and you work on a product, you're passionate about that product, what are the things that jump out at you as why would they not fix this? And do you understand why they haven't done it? And maybe you are a greater PM than they are and they haven't thought about it. But in a lot of cases, there's an explicit choice they've taken not to do it. Do you understand what that choice is?
Right.
So I think that becomes important just to see that they have that product thinking is what you want, for lack of a, like, design thinking and whatever.
Yes.
All I want is you have a product mindset.
Right.
You think about products, you see the good, which, well, everyone does to some extent. That's why they use products. But you see what is missing in that product, and that bugs you, right? You get irritated by the lack of it, because I hope you will bring that mindset to the product you work on as well, right? There's always ways to build the positive flow, but what is missing, what irritates you, or what hopefully when you hear your customers do, you feel about that this is something we need to go and fix,
right?
I want that mindset. And if you're a slightly senior hire, I want that ownership.
Right.
That I will own this. I will go to engineering, or I will go to support, and I will get this fixed. Right. So that ownership mindset from a product manager, well, a lot of people call it product owner, and there's a reason for that.
Right.
You are responsible for all of that. Other than that, storytelling is important. Can you fit stuff into your experiences, your customers' experiences? Do you spend time understanding your customers' daily life? That kind of stuff, right? That I mean, you can ask them either about their own stuff or stuff they've worked on. A lot of PMs are domain experts for some reason, but maybe not domain expert is the wrong word, but they've experienced the pain that they're trying to solve.
Right.
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 And that kind of helps. Right. Or if you haven't experienced that, then you better be going and talking to your users on a very, very regular basis, or doing a day in the life of where you understand what that guy does his entire day, and how your product is making or can make his life better, and what you can do to improve that. I think that makes for good PMs, right? With the B2C world, it is relatively easier. If you have e-commerce, I mean, you know what you want from Amazon, for example. Well,
right.
The other confusion there is, you are not the
user,
ideal end user,
right.
Sure. But you can still go and talk to, I don't know, if it's a tier two town, maybe you have relatives, you can go talk to
yes.
their experience shopping on an e-commerce website and so on. So it's slightly easier to some extent.
Right.
With B2B, you have to find that specialized customer.
Right.
And you have to, he has to be willing to give you time, and you have to spend that time with him. Right?
Right.
But both are important. Without that, you're not going to be able to build a good product. What else? Communication is really, really important.
Right.
And again, this depends on roles. Maybe for some roles, it's not that important. But and this is totally biased, and I'm totally biased when I interview and hire people there. But if you are writing down stuff, and by the way, I make people write down stuff.
Great.
I want to see that they are good at written communication.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be able to get your ideas across.
Right.
You cannot go talk to, for example, everyone inside your company. Forget outside. Even inside your company, you can't go talk to every engineer.
Right.
Right. And so your ideas are mostly going to come out as what? Documents. Either your requirements document, or a PPT, or a vision document, whatever. So you better be able to write a good document. Right? You have to be able to put your ideas across. That whole Amazon model of 6 pages or whatever, sure, that's an ideal model, and that works well because you have to be able to put your ideas in 6 pages. But forget 6 pages. Can you write 2 pages about something?
Right.
Can you, for example, write customer communication? If I, as a PM, now again, many hats and all that, if I need you to send an email apologizing to customers for something, can you frame a half decent email without making spelling and grammatical mistakes? Grammar mistakes irritate the heck out of me. In a resume, for example.
Yep.
People
yep.
have misspelled words, people have capitalizations, people have punctuation mistakes.
Right.
And you know what one of those bullet points will be? Attention to detail.
Right.
And I'm like, no, this is, you don't have attention to detail if you're making mistakes in your basic resume that you're sending to apply for a job. And this is one of those bullet points in every PMJD. You
right.
want attention to detail.
Right.
You want someone who can understand nitty-gritties, who can make sure that everything is well.
Right.
No one ever gets to pixel perfect, but you want them to be able to get details. And if they're making mistakes in their own resume, that is a red flag, I mean, sorry to say, in a lot of cases.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
And I'm like, you should have proofread your own thing before you submitted it to me.
Right, that's your first product.
Yeah,
out there.
Exactly. And if I ask them to submit a written assignment, for example, and I make people do that sometimes,
mm-hmm.
right? Because again, well, it winnows out the people who are not serious about the job
absolutely.
To some extent.
Absolutely.
And it tells me about their written and communication skills and so on. See, I'm okay if your English is not that good in terms of oral and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because again, you just have to go talk to a customer. If the customer in the same market, he gets your accent, he's fine if you miss some words, and that's okay. But if you're going to write document stuff that, again, growth PM, maybe stuff that you're going to put out on your website,
right.
copy better be good.
Right.
Right. It doesn't have to be world class, but it has to be acceptable.
Right.
So I think those things, and again, this is biased. Not everyone may feel that strongly about it. But in my case, I expect my PMs to be able to communicate well.
No, absolutely.
Have that attention of detail.
Right.
And not put it on a resume if they don't have it in that resume itself.
Right. Right.
Right. What else? I think we talked about red flags. What are red flags in PMs? I don't know, man. If they have a product mindset, I'll give them a shot.
Right.
Right. The one of those red flags is too many switches. Sure.
Right.
And well, this is true for any job.
Right.
You apply
That's
for a developer job, if you are switching every year,
right,
they are going to ask you why. Right. And if you have done, I don't know, 7 switches in 8 years, people are wondering why you don't like a particular job long enough to stick around and so on. But if you've got multiple switches in less than 2 years, I will be curious why. Because now let's assume you're a PM. You come into a company. In my opinion, now, if your startup shut down, you get a pass.
Right.
That's fine. Just tell me that this company shut down, it didn't work out, product didn't work out, and that's fine. Not every product we work on is going to be a super hit, make $200 million, and that's perfectly fine. But as a PM, you come into something, and I think this is another question and another subject we're going to discuss anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take you 3 months to find your footing.
Right.
It's going to take you, and again, depends on release cycles and how long people take to, like, a feature to be conceptualized to shipping to customer, right? Everyone has their own thing, and maybe the Swiggies and Flipkarts might be much faster and might do it in a month or even less than a month. But in most companies, it's going to take you 2, 3, 6 months for something to end-to-end go out to customers.
Right.
And so it's going to take you, in my opinion, at least 6 months to get even features to customers in some cases.
Right. Particularly and enterprise SaaS.
That's anyways extreme. In some cases, it could be even be a year to get something to a formal customer, for example.
Right.
And if by the time it's releasing, you're already moving on or looking for a job, even before you know what the result of something you worked on is,
right?
That is a red flag.
Right.
Did you not care enough to actually, for the product you worked on, to see what happened with that product? Right? Or you say, I did everything that could be done in 8 months, but then you better be able to justify that. Right? The point is that I'm curious about why you did that, why you moved on so quickly from a product. Right? Because, well, the proxy is that you're going to come here, spend 6 months, 8 months, put it on your resume and go to the next thing.
Right.
Right. While it takes time to onboard a PM, it takes time to train a PM, or just explain to him your processes, your features, your user base. Right. And that's an investment that everyone makes. And so obviously you want the guy to stick around for more than 6 to 8 months.
Right.
I think if I get 2 to 3 years out of a PM, that's good.
Right.
After that, hopefully they like the job enough and they like working with the users enough that they work longer on it. But I think you want people to work with you for at least 2 to 3 years. Anything less than that, I would say, is not good ROI from a PM hiring perspective. Because you spend
Absolutely.
A month, you spend
Absolutely.
Weeks hiring people and so on.
Yeah.
Right. And again, the other thing I'm usually curious about is, why are you a PM? And this goes back to a passion for products.
Right.
Or to improve things or build things. Right. Why did you get into PM versus, because after consulting, it's the new cool thing in all these schools.
Yeah, right.
Right. And some people don't have a good answer there. That's
right,
the funny part, especially junior.
I keep saying, like, a lot of people are a victim of content marketing.
Sure.
They are into PM because they feel, you know, they can't be CEOs, but they can be CEOs of
the product. I want to be CEO of my product.
Of front product.
There is no CEO of a product. I hate that term.
Yeah.
Right? There is no CEO of product. There is always a CEO of a company.
Yes.
If your CEO comes to you and says, do X, are you going to stand up? Sure, maybe you will. How strongly are you going to argue?
Right.
Do you value your opinion at that point enough that you will say, fire me, I will not do this? In my opinion, that is very rarely the case.
Yes.
So you're not CEO of your product. You might own P&L.
Yes.
Which is more the GM kind of model. And my
right.
company does this, right? My boss is a GM, for example. So
mm-hmm.
he owns P&L.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets questioned at the end of every quarter, did you meet your targets? If not, or what investment you need, blah, blah, blah.
Oh.
And that works. But that whole CEO of a product thing, I think, is misleading.
Right.
You
right.
can be an owner and you can have that owner mindset.
Mm.
But you know what? You're an employee typically working for someone else who is the eventual owner, all said and done.
Right. Cool. You know, you're already talking about onboarding the PM is so critical. Setting the right expectations is so important. Why don't you elaborate on that a little? You know, how to meet their expectations when they come on board, how to meet their expectations, and also set their expectations right. I've seen a lot of PMs complaining about saying, I don't get clarity, you know, and I'm like, dude, that's why you're there. Like, that's why they have hired you, because they don't have clarity,
sure.
you know, in the first place. So that's why you are there, to bring in clarity, bring in data, bring in, you know, a lot of processes and, you know, things in place, so that people below you would have clarity. But, you know, you complaining about lack of clarity doesn't cut it in most cases. I'm sure some of the concerns may be genuine.
Sure. I think lack of clarity is more of a startup problem.
Yes.
Typically.
Yes.
Right? Once you have a formal PM team, well, lack of clarity is not the problem. Future roadmaps could be a problem. What do you build, obviously, is a problem. But if you are going to a startup, founders are hiring their first PM. Often they may not know what a PM is supposed to do because they may or may not have worked with PMs or, well, good PMs before.
Absolutely.
Right? And in some cases, they don't know what to do even at a company level. Well, whether you like it or not.
First time founders, yes.
Sure.
Of course.
And while Flipkart looks like a magical, great story and it's a billion-dollar corporation today, I'm sure when they started out in the first couple of weeks, first couple of months, Sachin and Bini didn't have a great idea of where it would get to eventually.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? And every founder is there. They don't know what the product is going to morph to beyond an MVP. Some of them might have a vision, and well, it could be the WeWork vision of we are going to change the real estate world. But in general, they are also figuring it out as they go along. Right? And most good founders will be honest about it. They will tell you, this is what we know, this is what we have, this is what we have built, and help us figure out. And it's your job again to bring that clarity. Do we pivot? Do we add other features? What market segment do we go after? Where do we see traction today and where do can we see traction tomorrow? What are adjacent markets? That is your freaking job in that sense, right? So that is important from an expectation setting thing. Well, when you're coming in, you should get that clarity, right? Of what your job is and what their plan is. And often they may not have a plan and that's fine.
Hmm.
I mean, so long as you know it ahead of time and you're okay with that ambiguity to some extent. If you go into a more mature PM team, typically they know what they're doing. Right, they already have a roadmap and they know the features they are building. They just need someone to add more bandwidth, help them build those features, maybe evaluate, work with customers, fine tune that, add more features to that roadmap and so on. So I think there it becomes important and this helps both sides. This is not only helping the candidate coming in, but this is also helping you get clarity on what this guy will work on and what you will evaluate him on. And the best thing I've seen there to when people come in is to have and to write down a 30-day plan, a 90-day plan. It
right.
could be 60 if you think they can onboard faster. But typically, you want to do a one-month and a three-month check-in.
Right.
Right. What are your expectations? And if I'm going in as a new PM, I ask that same question.
Hmm.
What would you consider a success? What should I be good at or what should I be doing in 30 days or in 90 days?
Right.
Should I have talked to 20 customers?
Mm.
Should I have written my first PRD in X amount of time?
Mm.
And like I was saying earlier, 30 days is probably too less to do any impact. But 30 days is probably good enough for you to understand the product, the team, the market, stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. Understand what the team is working on and things like that.
30
days more learning. I would say 30 days more one-way learning where you are soaking in what the company is doing. While your 90 days more, you should have done something.
Mm.
Right, and part of it could be what are the 2-3 and if you have a junior PM coming in, I think part of, or even if you have a senior PM coming into a first PM with a founder involved, part of it is what is a quick win they can do?
Mm.
What small enough task can you give them that they can accomplish in 30, 40, 50, 60 days where they feel an achievement
right.
of having shipped something, done something, worked on something. Plus, it gives confidence to your engineering, to your sales and marketing team. Now, this could be as simple as building a data sheet or collating some existing stuff and building something new that the field is asking for example, right? Or running a campaign on the B2C side to pitch something or to sell something to customers that will get some good conversion rates and so on. But the point is to get that sense of achievement both to the PM as well as to people he works with. Because the other critical thing that I don't think we talked about is, as a PM, you have to work with every department.
Absolutely.
Right? You have to work with sales, support, marketing, product, engineering, customer success, whatever else you have.
Right.
And a quote I once read somewhere, and I forget where, essentially said that you represent whoever is not in that room.
Not in the room.
Right?
Correct. Correct.
And you have to be that voice.
Right.
And so you need everyone to trust you. You need everyone to have confidence in you. So that quick win helps,
right?
On both sides to establish that relationship. And then have a 90-day plan on what would be a success, what would be your first deliverables and so on. And yes, it helps you. It helps your manager or your boss, whoever he is, to actually think through it. Sometimes people have not thought through this, right? You might onboard a PM and you might not have thought through what would be their success or achievement criteria 3 months down the line.
Right.
But honestly, it helps you as an incoming PM as well.
Right.
You know what the expectation is, you know what you have to deliver, and tomorrow when there's a performance appraisal, check-in, whatever you want to call it,
right,
you can say, this is what the target was. Did you meet it? Did you not meet it? And not meeting it doesn't mean I'm going to kick you out.
Right.
Because maybe it was too hard, maybe it was not doable, and dates always slip. I mean,
right,
hey, we all work with engineering and PM and customers, and you may or may not hit your target, but was there a plan?
Right.
And even if you didn't get to 100%, maybe you got to 70%.
Right.
If you got to 20%, that's a problem.
Hmm.
And that's a different conversation.
Hmm.
But if you're at 80%, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Right. You hopefully achieved most of what you set out to do.
Right.
So
right.
Hopefully that's great.
Right. So essentially you're saying a way to good PM onboarding is to have a plan for 30 and 90 days.
Yes, on both sides.
On both
and
sides.
And set those expectations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a great point. That having it on both sides is what is the key. To match the expectations of evaluation at the end of the check-in period or whatever.
Definitely, especially if there's no structured PM team. If it's a structured team, at least they have an idea of what you will work on. If there isn't a team and you're coming in fresh, you have to set expectations with your founder, your CTO, whoever you're reporting to. Again, more startup-focused advice.
Right.
But they may or may not even know what a PM is going to do, or they may have a very vague idea.
Right.
This often helps to at least crystallize that. That even if you don't know, let's do the research.
Right.
What would you like me to focus on?
Absolutely.
Because again, startup, you might be able to do 20 things.
Right.
What is actually most value to the business?
Right.
And is that written down, and is that a realization that while I could put you on work on 5 things, there's this one thing that will move the needle essentially for me if you did it in 90 days?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. And sometimes they haven't thought through this. Well, often they haven't
often,
thought through this.
Often, yeah. I would say that often. Yeah. That is what leads to a lot of smart PMs exiting in 6 months and 9 months.
Sure.
Because, you know, they figured out that, no, this is not happening. But I guess the problem starts on day zero when you don't have a plan to begin with in the first place. So, I think that's where a lot of problems happen. And that's why the question that what is a good way to actually onboard? I think that's a great
right.
insight there.
No, I think the other thing that happens in those cases, a lot of times when PMs exit, and this is orthogonal to our discussion,
mm-hmm.
is that responsibility problem also.
Mm-hmm.
You have to give them enough responsibility for them to go fuck up on their own.
Yep.
Right? And that doesn't mean they're going to get fired, but everyone's got to be able to, one, make mistakes. Second, you need to give them ownership of something.
Right.
It could be a small feature, it could be a product, but if you hire someone, the whole point is to get things off your head.
Right.
Right? And if I have to micromanage you, or I want to micromanage you for everything that you're doing,
right.
what's the benefit of hiring you?
Right.
So unless and until, for example, well, again, this is personal, but if I can't do something 50% better, I will not go and put my foot into your business.
Okay.
I might be able to do it 5%, 10% better, but you know what? I have other things to do. You have other things to do.
Right.
And honestly, again, my needle mover, hopefully, in terms of my KPIs to my boss,
right.
that 5% doesn't help anyone.
Right.
And at that point, I'm like, okay, sure, I have done it for 10 years, you've done it for 3 years. Yes, maybe I can do it 5% better, but is that 5% and me coming into your life and making you miserable going to help? Probably not.
Right. No, makes sense. Makes sense. I guess also one of the things, and probably something that we discussed earlier, is that having a PM only kind of makes sense when you have the building power available.
Sure.
If you don't have that machinery in place already, it is very difficult for a PM, because you're just adding an additional layer of management while your building factory is still not in place, or not stable.
Yeah, I mean,
so
if you have 3 developers, hiring a PM isn't going to do anyone any good.
Yep,
at
makes
that
sense.
Point, because if he wants to build something, and like you said,
you can't really do it.
He can generate PRDs, but
right.
those don't help anyone till they ship.
Right, right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, so we talked about, just briefly touched upon the evaluation or check-in, or appraisal thing. Let's say, for a regular, not for a new one, but for a regular product person, what are the evaluation criteria? What should they be judged on? What should they be evaluated on in due course of their stint?
Sure. Essentially, when is a PM a success?
Yes, yes.
But
absolutely.
When a PM comes in, I think this takes time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? 3 months is probably, and even that 90-day plan we talked about, sure, you can evaluate what he did in terms of what he was supposed to do for 90 days. But it's probably not enough time to evaluate a PM. Right? It doesn't tell you that much because he's still finding his feet. He's still figuring out the product, still connecting to your customers. I mean, unless and until he comes in for example, the same background, the same domain knowledge, just switched companies across competitors or something, in which case you would expect that PM to hit the ground running.
Right.
And he knows what's the market like, what customers are like, and so on. In which case you can have higher expectations, I would say, argue for the 3 month period from that PM. But other than that, I think you use the 3 month mark to get feedback, give feedback to that person about what he's doing right, what he should do more of. Get feedback from the team on what they think about that PM, what their experience working with him and what he should do more of and things like that. I think 6 months is probably when you can objectively identify what a person has done, right? And of course, you still need goals to measure on. Big believer in the whole OKR model, right? You have specific measurable KPIs you need to hit. Not every goal can be a measurable KPI. Right, because there's obviously going to be soft things you need to do and so on. But you at least want one or two measurable criteria that you evaluate on. And this goes beyond just evaluating a PM. This is in general evaluating anyone who reports to you or anyone in a team. Right? Are they clear on what they are going to be measured on ahead of time?
Absolutely.
You can't go to someone after 6 months and be like, you didn't do enough of this. And the guy's like, you never told me to.
Right.
And which is also comes back to, I think, continuous feedback.
Mm.
To people, the only time you discuss your goals and your achievement/progress with your manager shouldn't be
the appraisal time,
the 6 month cycle.
Right.
You, if you are being blindsided and if you didn't see that train coming, you have, well, your manager has issues to some extent.
Absolutely.
As a hiring manager, then, or as a manager, then you have a failure at that point, right? Because you need to be giving feedback as often as possible. Again, beyond orthogonal to this discussion, but things like one-on-ones are important.
Right.
You don't have to do them every week, but every 2-3 weeks, you should be touching base with your reportee on what their challenges are, what they're working on, what they need help on, and so on. Right. So those things are important, and which is why at the end of 6 months or 3 months, whatever your appraisal cycle is, well, usually it's 6 months or a year, most companies.
Yeah.
There should be no surprises in that sense. People should go in, of course, you have that discussion on did you meet your targets, did you not, and so on. But I think we're unlooping at this point.
Right.
But it should be something you already know that
right.
you're doing well or not well.
So essentially what you're saying is that if your appraisal meeting has surprises in it, then the entire process is screwed up, and you know,
possibly the manager didn't do as good a job as they should have of setting goals and measuring progress continuously against those goals.
Understood. There's something wrong at multiple places, and you know,
well, I would say it's a problem with you as a manager
rather
than a candidate's
problem. Absolutely.
And it's like sales. You have an annual target, you break it up into quarterly targets, and most sales team will even track monthly or even weekly goals. Right, it's that same thing. You are measuring progress, and it doesn't have to be daily or weekly, but monthly, quarterly, you should be giving feedback, getting feedback, and so on.
Right.
Beyond what HR mandates.
Right. And is there something specific that you would be tracking, or do you think it is very different for different products?
I think it's different.
Okay.
It depends on what your KPIs are.
Right.
What are you interested in delivering?
Okay.
The other thing is whatever you measure is what people focus on.
Absolutely.
Right. And you can skew incentives. And this is again, well, I'll give a parallel to sales typically. Whatever you incentivize, that's what people will focus on. You do 1.5x multiple or multiplier of quota attainment on something, they are all going to focus on that thing versus the 1x. Right? So it is a way of setting incentives and aligning behavior to some extent. But that's what KPIs are for. That's what I'm going to measure you and give you an appraisal on. You should know that, and you should be focusing on that anyway. That's the whole point.
Understood. Right. That makes a lot of sense. All right, so I think we're done with our list of questions that were on this theme. I would come back to the template question that I ask everyone in this podcast, and which is, what has been your secret tool that has helped you in product management? It could be a book, it could be a mantra, it could be some experience that you had, or some internet resource, or a tool. So what is it for you?
I don't have a specific book or something in mind. I read a lot, but it's all RSS feeds and everything all over the place. So I don't think that matters that much. This is something I alluded to as part of the expectations from a PM, right? I think you have to be passionate about products. You have to be irritated when something is not right or when something is not done right. I think that makes for a good PM. Right. And this, again, I could be biased and not everyone might agree with this. And I know people who are like, my whole life's work is not to be PM. I have other things to do in life, which is fine.
Yep.
Right. But let's say you're devoting 8 hours of your life to this job, even 5 days a week. I'm not saying work on weekends. Right. But for those 8 hours, can you bring that passion for that product you are working on? Can you be irritated by things that are not done right?
Right.
And that doesn't mean screaming and going after people, but that means figuring out how do you fix those things.
Right.
And I think it applies nicely to personal life as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And not to be OCD about it, but
right.
You need to fix things that you don't like.
Right. All right, cool. Thanks a lot, Jasnoor. It has been a very, very interesting discussion with you today. And all right, this is your host Ujjwal signing off, and we are talking at theproductmanagement.com.
Thanks, Ujjwal.